Jane, thank you so much for joining Diabetes Chat. For those who don't know Jane, I'll give a little short and sweet introduction. I see there's plenty of people though that do know you, Jane. And but anyway, so everyone meet Jane. She is a passionate advocate who has been living with type 1 for the last 17 years. On her blog, she very hilariously says that she, you know, drive or diabetes. Known as the Diabeing Mindset on socials, Jane's an Irish student dietitian studying, is it a master's in dietetics in Edinburgh, Jane? Is that it?
That's it, yeah.
And you're a bonkers sea swimmer, a dancer, singer, and a writer. And in December 2020, she started blogging on Instagram under the theme Diabeing, the Diabeing Mindset, and aiming for an honest portrayal of life with diabetes. She'll talk about why she calls herself the Diabeing Mindset later on. Jane's advocacy extends to promoting access to diabetes care and technology, and she's actively engaged in the diabetes online community. But her journey has led her to major conferences through DDoC and other organizations. She has set up a peer support group with others in Edinburgh, and she is from the south of Ireland, from Limerick, and is involved there in peer support, and we'll talk about that a bit later too. But her story is really strong, and just has been growing over the last number of years, and we're so lucky to have you on Diabetes Chat. Thank you so much for coming. Tony is going to take you through the 90-second questions. I'm going to put a timer on and try and do this really, really fun, because that was really fun to watch.
I've got my little timer here. So
have you? Okay, right. I mean, I don't even need to. Then I'll leave you in Tony's.
See, I thought that 90 seconds was to do with each answer, but it's going to be really hard trying to read through that lot. It's let alone
you don't need to Tony, but it fun. All right, I'll let you guys go.
Jeez. Thanks so much, Ray. That was a lovely introduction. I really appreciate it. I've got a massive head after that, so thank you so much. And yeah, just lovely to be on tonight, so I really appreciate it, and it's so, so nice to be in the space. And I feel like I'm cheating though, having gotten to listen into Tony's quickfire round.
Yeah, so that wasn't so you know the approach now.
No doubt, I'll still struggle with it. I still am a bit anxious about it, but we'll get through it. And
I was stitched up like a kipper. So are you ready?
I think so.
Okay, so here we go. Six questions. Oh god, the music. So six questions on the specialist subject of you. So ready?
Yeah.
Are you steady?
Just about.
Okay. Could you turn the music off?
That was the one thing that was unsteadying.
Yeah. It's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like having questions under pressure, isn't it? A lie detector.
Yeah, it was like the timer as well.
Yeah. We were gonna start on the needles underneath the fingernails as well, just to, you know, up the ante. But no,
I thought okay. I got a head start, but natural fact, I needed something of obstacles to jump over there to even out back into a level playing field with everyone else.
Okay, so you ready?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So starting 3, 2, 1. Name and occupation.
Jean, and I'm a student dietitian and diabetes advocate.
Brilliant. Where were you diagnosed? How old and when?
I was 11, 2006, and in Limerick.
Okay. Do you fingerprint or use smart technology?
I have a CGM and pump, so I'm on the Medtronic 780G system. Hybrid. Okay.
Good. When you do fingerprint, do you change the Lancets every day? I know what the answer is going to be.
Absolutely not. I think I have Lancet. I think I've just given up on that.
Okay. Insulin pens or a pump?
Pump.
Okay, what do you prefer?
Pump.
Good. To go hypo treatment?
Sorry?
To go hypo treatment?
Oh, sorry, yes, D.
Okay. And what do you think is worse, hypos or hypers?
Hypos.
Okay. What one thing do you like about being diabetic?
The lovely people I've gotten to meet.
Ah, they copied my answer there. What is the one thing you don't like about diabetes?
Long-term complications and mental health.
Okay, good. Love or hate the smell of insulin?
Love, make it into a candle.
Ah, yeah, that's a great idea. And then finally, on a desert island, what things would you take? Can include diabetic things.
Phone, charger, power bank.
No electricity there.
Oh, crap. Oh, I thought the power bank was an application.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell I've been thinking about that since mine. Okay. Yeah. We just got a little bit over. Over 90 seconds, which is 1 minute 47 seconds, but that was probably me. Just
well done, you guys.
That was amazing. Yeah. I think we should just rename it as the 1 minute 47 quick fire questions. Come on, it's a new name.
Do you know what? That's on brand for me though, because I am late for everything. So
Is that a diabetic thing? Because my family reckon I run on Fox time, and they have this thing about. So whenever we got to be somewhere, they always tell me a quarter of an hour previously. So but it's terrible, and I can see my daughter getting the same trick now. Can't get her anywhere on time.
Oh, do you know, I'm in that camp too.
Do you think it's a type one thing or just coincidental?
I don't know. I think it might be an ADHD thing with me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it might be, like, in my experience anyway, because I have friends who have type one and they are so punctual. Like the girls I run the Diabetes Edinburgh group with, they kill me for they're so on time and I am so not on time, and we end up just having two different start times for things basically.
I was hoping to go downstairs late and say to everybody, listen, there's a reason why I can never get out anywhere on time.
It's not my fault.
And then blame it on the condition, but you've just kind of shot through that with the...
I think it's just part of a personality too. I honestly try to be on time, and I have to work so hard when I have to be on time, and I do work very hard at it. But if I don't have to, I will go and put a load up in the washing machine, and just expect to have green traffic lights all the way.
Oh, I'm the same. I have such optimism. Like Camille, actually, who was on last week, was here for New Year's, and he asked me how long it took to get from the shop to mine. And when we were halfway through the walk, I said it was a 5 minute walk, and he was like, the walk is not 5 minutes, we're halfway through it. It's 10 minutes of a walk. And he said, basically, my idea of time is not factual. It's not fact-based. It's vision-based. And I love that. I have a vision.
That's a really nice descriptor. I like it. It's like we're time lords. Just kind of...
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Just enjoy life. It's okay. We'll get there.
Exactly. We have it right. Everyone else has it wrong.
how did he describe it again? Because that was a really nice phrase.
Vision. A vision sense of time.
Vision sense. I've just written this down because it does make sense.
Not fact-based, which I just think is brilliant.
I use up all my energy, like in my work, like for like being organized and on time and like meeting deadlines and doing all those things, and then see after that it's like,
but this is it, we only have so much discipline in a day. And I think, like Tony, what you were saying there, I think there definitely is some truth to it with the time, with the lateness and whatnot with having type one, depending on the approach to it. But like, I genuinely think we apply so much diligence and discipline to our management, or you know, just it's so much attention. that like it's, yeah. It's hard.
I think there's a prioritizing of time, isn't there? So for instance, most of the stuff, if you look at things like going to restaurants or you know, most of the stuff, 5 or 10 minutes really doesn't matter, particularly with friends. But you know, things that really do matter, I'm always able to. So I tend to, triage triage what's important and getting there on time and stuff. So but for some people it you know, being on time is light, being late is it's that saying, isn't there, about but I don't know, it's just again, it's just, but it's funny, at work it's like being organized, and being kind of at work. I'm a different person totally at work. So in terms of, you know, if I've got a problem to resolve at work, I'm really careful. At home, stick a shelf up, a couple of screws in the wall, you know, it's that kind of separating one's personal and professional life. And we are different characters. So it's just, and I've noticed that over the years.
I agree. Right, next section then we're going to go on to. Yeah, and you're doing this one as well, Tony. This is all about your diabetes diagnosis and journey game. So I'll leave you back in Tony's safe hands, and there's no time on this one. Well, technically there's no time, but like there is a time.
To say with us all now that we all know that we're the same with our time management.
I know this is a really hard thing. Diabetes chat's a really hard thing where we all chat. Like, our messaging you earlier, this thing, me going off on a tangent here, messaging you earlier, like when you had a work thing that you weren't sure if you could make it a half face, like, we can chat, we're okay. We can fill time. Yeah, I'll leave you with Tony, I won't take up any more time.
So, diabetes diagnosis and journey. So what, you know, we'll talk about the diagnosis and then the journey, and so, you know, just answer however you want. I mean, it's really a chat about you and your journey more than anything else. So I'll kind of share with the community you know, your diagnosis story, where and when and how old, and then we can talk about the obvious things like, you know, support and reactions from the family and stuff, but you know, where and when and how old.
Yeah, so I was 11, so it was coming up to the summer holidays, and I'd been really sick for quite a while, and so that's 17 years ago now, I'm 28. So I was in primary school, and yeah, I just had all the main symptoms really. I was absolutely tiny. It was coming up to my, like in Ireland, we have our confirmation around that age, which is kind of a ceremony. And I remember trying to find clothes for it. And I was trying on clothes age 7, 6, and I was 11. So there was a drastic weight loss.
That wasn't me, by the way.
That was me. I was like, oh no, that's a sad one. Sorry.
Don't be at all. That was brilliant. So it was a bit mad. I went to the GP a few times, and initially they thought it was kind of like a stomach flu or a flu, and at the last minute, I remember we were just like literally up and we were walking out the door, and my GP is a lovely man, he's been with me since I was a child, like, and he's a great GP, and he at the last minute said, you know, we'll do a urine sample, and then my ketones were really high and my blood sugars were quite high, so just basically got an overnight bag and went straight into hospital for 2 weeks, and had the time of my life in hospital. They were lovely to me. They were so, so great in the pediatric unit. And I must say, for a diagnosis, that was probably the best part of my care They gave me a false impression of what I was.
I think at that age, you know, because I was 10, and you just do as you know, it's just one more thing, isn't it? You just do as you're told.
Yeah.
And it's all a bit of a crack, and you know, you're given lots of care and looking after, and it's just, you know, I always say it's probably worse to get diagnosed older. Because, you know, if you've gone through your teens and into your 20s, it's just, you've developed that part of yourself that kind of doesn't like. But you know, it's just, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, how, looking back on, presumably, you know, looking back at family photographs, could you see yourself kind of getting worse and worse? I mean, did your parents kind of, you know, notice that that, you know, if you were physically kind of getting worse and worse?
Yes, yeah, definitely. We have like very few family photographs. It's only in later years that I started bullying my family to taking family photographs. So we don't have the recording of it really, but yeah, they definitely noticed. I think especially when I went to buy the clothes that time, that was really an indicator when all of it, because, you know, with the other clothes, I was just putting belts on stuff or like, yeah. But then when I went to actually buy new clothes and all of a sudden we realized the drastic difference, because you don't really notice. Well, it wasn't severe enough at that point as well. I was lucky that I, you know, didn't get that to that point where I was near diabetes coma or anything like that. But diabetes is in my family as well. So my granddad and my uncle had it too. So it was good in that way. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I think thankfully my GP did that test at the last minute, because all of my symptoms were a lot more flu-like than anything acute, really. The weight loss was just the main indicator, I think, and that was kind of the final straw for my memory. But it's all quite hazy, to be honest, when I look back on it. I think I was really unwell for a few months, even if the symptoms weren't the obvious ones, as in as drastic as, you know, they can get. They were still obvious, but I think the whole time I was just really unwell with it, and the whole kind of period there is just quite a blur. I remember going to like my races and downing energy drinks and looking for energy from any kind of foods as well, just with the exhaustion, a lot of fatigue definitely. But yeah, it was quite blurry because I was so unwell. Yeah, I don't know if they're a better age to get diagnosed with. It's so hard to say. I've heard people say that too, you know, that it can be better to be diagnosed as a child or as a adult. And I think it's one of those things that's so individual.
For me, it was a great crack. We, you know, we did 2 or 3 weeks off school. It was brilliant. It was just, you know, and I got to basically inject oranges, and it was great.
Aww. So
I had this little kid on the ward called Gary. And me and him, he had some stomachy, and but we're great mates and stuff. So yeah, it was just it was a bit of a crack, really.
That's lovely. Yeah, it's a funny one. The war, like, honestly, on diagnosis, I think they're like, the teams there are just brilliant. Like, I was similar in the 2 weeks I was in hospital on diagnosis. They were just fantastic. They like used to bring the PlayStation down to my room for me, and really, really attentive. But I will say, it was quite, the most dramatic part about it for me at that point, when I didn't really understand it all fully, was the fact I didn't get to go to the summer camp, which was the next month. So I made up for it though. I went the 4 years after. But yeah, I wasn't allowed to go with the diagnosis being so new.
How did your parents feel, you know, about, was, you know, have you ever talked about that, or did you talk about that at the time, or did, you know, was it the classic thing about, as parents, you kind of do your worrying on your own without letting your child worry?
Yeah, they definitely took that approach, which I don't know was the best thing for them, to be honest. Yeah, they very much, they were amazing, and they did everything they could to try and protect me from it, and really took all the management into their hands. My mom and my dad, I suppose my mom kind of took the very hands-on approach, and then everyone else in my family at the time kind of stayed back from it a bit. And I think that was kind of something they maybe agreed on, to not have it as the main focus. But I don't know, it's interesting now, seen, I suppose, living in Scotland now and seeing things like the family weekenders that happen by Diabetes UK, where the whole family is immersed and allowed to kind of discuss it and ask questions and be a part of it, because it does impact everyone. It's not one of those things, I think, that can be, it can be minimized and it can be seen as something small and just a thing that we all do. But I think if people don't have that opportunity to talk about it, I don't know, is that the best approach? But at the time there was just no supports available and there was no advice given on how to do it. So I mean, my family were just incredible and always have been, and they've really done their best with what was dealt. But there's no right way to deal with the diagnosis, I think, and it's so individual. But when I look back at it now as an adult, I suppose my main kind of reflection is I wish they had maybe all taken some time to discuss it themselves too, and to acknowledge the impact it would have on their lives and acknowledge the impact that it would have on our day-to-day lives as well, which was kind of maybe brushed over a little bit to protect me. It was very much all about protecting me, which I'm very grateful for. But yeah, I think it does really impact the whole family and should be treated as such and should be advised as such by the...
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have two big sisters, two amazing sisters.
And how did they deal? I know my brother at the time, I think it frustrated him. He kind of surrounded me, and anybody ever said anything, it was all, you know, he's fiercely protective.
Well, your siblings are like that, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they're great. My sisters are a good bit older than me. So one's 11 years older than me and the other one is 5 years older than me.
Yeah.
So for them, I felt so, like, looking back on it again, like I say, the whole kind of year was a blur. So I don't have much memory of it. But my sister was going through her exams, which must have been really, really challenging for her because, you know, she was in her finals in Ireland and I was in hospital. So that was quite stressful, a time that maybe, you know, our parents' attention was very much divided between supporting her and me going through a diagnosis. And obviously there would be an imbalance there in the attention. So that must have been tricky. And for my other sister, then, she was at university. And I think she was on her study abroad when I was diagnosed. So that was also quite stressful. It was a quite unusual situation, all of it, because, you know, my granddad had it and my uncle had it as well. And my granddad was still alive at the time, but my uncle had passed away a few years before prematurely. So I think with that as well, there's a lot there that maybe we haven't all even chatted about still to this day. But it definitely impacted everyone in a different way. And yeah, it's good to have conversations about that.
So in terms of being diagnosed living in the Republic and now studying in Edinburgh, have you, I know it's different times, but have you noticed a kind of a reaction or a care difference, you know, or is it just kind of, you know, are there any differences between, you know, the Republic and Scotland? I mean, have you?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Before I talk about the differences, I need to give a shout out to Dawn, T1 Dawn, yes. Because her and I were both on the amazing Tino's podcast, which is now called Global Diabetes Insights.
Okay.
But it's funny you say the Republic of Ireland, because Dawn promotes Northern Ireland so amazingly well, Tino thought only Northern Ireland existed. And I just think that's brilliant.
It's because you know I know my mum's Irish and of course I have people say Southern Ireland and it's just it's a different country and so there is that thing.
It's honestly brilliant. I just think it's a testament to Dawn because when I said it to Tino, I was like, Tino, look, the only reason I say it is not for political reasons, just purely we have a different healthcare system and different politics and everything. So when I'm talking about my experience of diabetes care in the Republic, it is actually different to Dawn. So it's not, that's the only reason I wouldn't, you know, care otherwise. But I just think it's such a testament to her that Tino firmly believes only Northern Ireland exists. Like,
He said, I didn't realise there was another parish. But yeah, I think that's brilliant. But sorry, in terms of the differences in care, huge differences. It's been mind-blowing, to be honest. I will say, though, one disclaimer to that is that I am living in Edinburgh, which is the capital. So I'm obviously going to experience better care than maybe in the rest of Scotland. So I don't want to speak about really the differences between Scotland and the Republic, because then I'm in Limerick in Ireland, which is very much not the capital and has, I believe, the worst diabetes care in the Republic. I could be wrong there, though, but I think the hospital is just, and I don't mean that as a joke, I mean genuinely, I think it might be ranked because of the lack of services and care there. It's improving, definitely. We have our advocacy group, Midwest Diabetes, where we advocate for better services in the Midwest. So for IM is Limerick, and that would constitute Limerick, Tipperary and Clare. And I think I've forgotten one there, apologies. But so in terms of my care in Ireland, I basically wouldn't have been able to get a pump where I am in Ireland. In Limerick, they don't have a pump clinic for adults. They support children on pumps coming into the adult clinic, but they honestly still don't. I'm not sure about the support there. I haven't attended in so many years. So what I had to do in Ireland was pay for private health insurance and travel to a different city for my care to be able to have access to a dietitian, to have access to the same doctor, like the same endocrinologist. In the clinic in Limerick previously, I would never have seen the endocrinologist. I would have seen the student doctors on rotations, and not that they are not very competent and whatnot, it's just that it meant there was no continuity of care, which was a real struggle. So every appointment was very much just confirming I was the person on the sheet of paper in front of them.
I think that's a similar that for me feels like nowadays GP care, you know. My GP retired a couple of years ago, and now I'm only ever seen by whoever happens to be there. And it sounds as though that doesn't instill, you know, a relationship which is so important between patients and healthcare professionals. It's, you know, we're fairly lucky, most of us, having that relationship with their consultant and their DSNs, but I mean certainly that must have been a bit, not alienating, wrong word, but
Definitely alienating, actually, that's a good word for it. I would definitely agree, because I mean it takes a while to build up confidence to speak to someone, especially about things that are quite, you know, what's the word, pervasive in your everyday life. And it's hard to build up that rapport with someone. And they honestly, I think with something like diabetes, it does really need to be the same doctor that you see continuously. Because they need to be able to see you through different times of the year, through different cycles of life, to really be able to support you and help you acknowledge passions when maybe you can't. Because that's the whole thing with type 1, isn't it? We're trying to acknowledge as many passions as possible and then reduce variability in the ways that mean we can still live life and do what we want to do in life, but understand the variables and how they interact with our diabetes and then make changes around those, or prepare to make changes around those. And if we don't have that support, that's very hard to do on your own, and that's the point of having that support. I really will say for my care in Ireland, it was really, really poor up until I started getting my care in Cork. And it was really lucky that I had moved to Cork at the time. Basically, I moved after university.
There you go, best city in the Republic.
I honestly after Limerick. But yeah, I love Cork. It's great. Not to sound like someone from Cork, but I love Cork. It was there that I moved to there for my first job after university and started attending my care there. And then when I moved back to Limerick, I stayed with it because they were so fantastic and it was worth the money. It's very expensive. My appointments are €150 per endocrinology appointment and €50 for the dietitian or the nurse. And then I still need to be on private health insurance to avail of all of that. So that's €50 a month. So it was quite a lot, but I will say the quality of my life has changed astronomically since since doing that, and it was worth spending all of my disposable income on, which is not a fun thing to do as a graduate, but unfortunately it had to be done, and that shows the inequity in Ireland, because if you can't afford that, then you're getting the care that I was on previously, which is not access to the available technology, not access to the dietitian, not access to continuity of care. There's a lot of issues, and that's something that brought me into advocacy. Once I realised what I should have been getting all along, because I mean, I was 13 years into my diagnosis at that point. Or was I less? I think I was like just 11, 12 years into my diagnosis, like 12 years of the care I'd had previously. And then all of a sudden I realised you could have a quality of life with type 1, and there was treatments available, and technology, and all these other fabulous things that just were never brought to my attention.
So in terms of, and this leads into the journey, but in terms of technology, how has that impacted your life? Presumably now your hybrid closed loop, and how have you seen that kind of journey from when you were first diagnosed? Presumably insulin pens when you first diagnosed.
Yeah. Oh my God, great question. So I was on 2 injections when I was first diagnosed for the first year. So I was on Mixtard, and that was twice a day. And it was a very fixed routine, getting up early to make sure I had food and my injections at the same time every day. And I was so glad when I moved over to the 4 injections and had a bit more flexibility, but I didn't know I had as much flexibility as I had. I didn't know I could take corrections. Again, it comes back to the lack of education and services. I was given different pens and different insulin to use, but not informed, I suppose, how to best use them or get the most out of them. And it wasn't until I went to Cork again that I learned I could take corrections, and that I learned I could have snacks in between things and take insulin for those snacks and not wait 4 hours to take my next injection.
Was that like a formal, like we have Daphne and Bertie courses? Did you go through a...
No.
Okay.
No, there's no education. So in the clinic in Limerick, we just got Daphne accredited in 2022.
Okay.
So it just recently accredited. But before that, there's no education. So it's literally, you just see the nurse, you get a blood sample, urine sample, height and weight checked, and then you go see the doctor and he says up 2 units, down 2 units. And that's it after a 7-hour wait. So, not a great use of time, unfortunately, but definitely a checkbox activity more than anything else. So as given the pens, just not the, I suppose, best information on how to use them, which I then learned all about later and learned I could do my own research. It was very much I was always waiting on the clinical advice instead of taking any initiative or being proactive in I didn't really want to engage with my diabetes though at all. It was, I think, I apart from not knowing to actually go and look things up and go and like find out for myself when I wasn't given the information, I assumed I was being handed all the information that I needed. It was the white lab coat effect. So I really assumed that the doctors knew everything that I could possibly need to know, and whatever they were telling me was all I needed to know, and I went with that and didn't realize I could have the quality of life that I've had since having technology and since having education on diabetes and understanding it better, which has led me down this glorious path of advocacy to make sure other people who were living under a rock like myself see the light.
I think all of us have at some point had that vulnerability because of the lack of knowledge and technology. I mean, it feels to be the similarity of care. That's where the similarity of care, is between the Republic and over here. At some point 15, 20, 25 years ago, that was the standard. Given pens, don't give the education. I think it's, we've got better, haven't we?
Definitely improved. You're absolutely right. And it's funny you say that, give the pens but not the education. I think it's gas. I feel like a lot of healthcare professionals are still kind of are under the impression that diabetes has office hours. And they don't realise that we're managing it all this time, and we need as much information and education as possible. It's not a case, just tell us the bare minimum and hope for the best and then make the adjustments every 6 months. We need to be able to be empowered to make those adjustments daily and to preempt making adjustments. And we can't do that every 6 months. That's just not the way life works. So it's about learning that the hard way, I suppose. If you don't get to learn it through them, we learn one way or another. That brings me to the differences. Like, you had asked that, and I hadn't really touched on the differences between Scotland and Ireland. So Ireland's 5 years behind the NHS. So the HSE is 5 years behind the NHS. And we don't have a diabetes registry in Ireland. I believe I saw somewhere funding just got approved finally. So we'll know how many people in the country have diabetes, which types and where they are, which would be great. But yeah, we base the prevalence off Scotland, funnily enough. So off of Scotland's registry. But the care here, I have to say, and I am very aware I'm living in a capital city, but it has been phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. I can't believe it's free. The reason, and funnily enough, I didn't chase the care, they chased me. I signed up for travel vaccines and had to tick a box that I have diabetes, and all of a sudden I got letters saying, go to a clinic, go to a psychologist, go to a dietitian, and they were just on it, go get a retina screening. I got all the letters through the box straight away with the
appointment. It's like freebies, isn't it? Got a freebie, yeah. I'm gonna go and have drops in my eyes because it's free. Oh yeah, bring it on.
That's it. I was very impressed. I got the letters like as soon as I ticked those boxes, within a day. Not the letter for the counselling, but they were lovely to offer me that support. So it's great to attend diabetes specific counselling over here, which is incredible.
I think that is, you know, I think that side of things, and particularly the burnout and the emotional side of things, that probably still is quite a patchy side of care, particularly. Yeah. I know that from my own from my own CCG, it's just, you know, there's not the resources available for help, particularly in terms of mentally, physically. Yeah. There is, but you know, I think again, like you say, it could be because you're in the capital city.
Yeah.
And there's more resources. I mean, have you gone through that? Have you gone through that stage of burnout and emotional or mental, you know, that kind of disengagement with the condition?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? It comes in peaks and troughs. I mean, like, it's not like I've gone through one stage of burnout. I go through multiple stages of burnout. I feel a burnout is a bit like the way other conditions have flare-ups. Like, I think it's natural. Like, for me, anyway, sorry, it's very personal and individual, and I know people who haven't gone through burnout, and kudos. Because for me, anyway, I definitely struggle with a lot of those periods of burnout, because you're right, we're equipped with the physical side, but not the mental side. And the thing is that if you want to be able to take care of the physical things, mental things need to be in check. I mean, it's very hard to change, do site changes, do sensor changes, when our brain is saying, do nothing at all, sleep, don't get out of bed, don't turn the lights on. I mean, how are we meant to, doing sensor changes in the dark, would not recommend. So those periods of burnout are really, really tough. I've gone through multiple of those. And I think it's been really nice the last couple of years being in the diabetes community and having the word to articulate what that experience is. You know, people often say like labels aren't necessary. I think labels are really helpful for me. They help me to identify what's happening, and they help me to understand it better, and also make me feel not alone in it. And like, I failed at something. Not that I wish burnout on anyone, but for anyone who shares their experiences on it, I really appreciate it, because it's really nice to know that it's not just me struggling to do this 24/7 job that I never sent a CV in for.
I think, we probably all said ad nauseum that it's amazing to have our community in all the different flavors that it comes in, because you do, it's a very alienating condition, I mean, certainly at 2 o'clock in the morning when your alarms are going off and you need to, you know, it's a very alienating condition. When in fact, you know, the next day you fire a tweet and say da da da, and you're getting, you know, literally dozens of responses saying, mm-hmm. "Oh yeah, that happened to me. Yes, this," and it's comforting. You know, it's comforting having our people, you know, together, yes. understanding.
And do you know what I was thinking about recently? What's even more alienating when you don't have the diabetes community? And that experience happens where you have that 2 a.m. low blood sugar and you feel like you're going to die, and then you eat 7 pots of ice cream. Not me, a friend. No, it was definitely me. But I mean, when you have those experiences and then you wait 6 months to talk to a healthcare provider who's never experienced that, and instead of showing compassion and saying that's a completely human reaction to a terrifying situation, they say, "Why did you do that? You're only meant to have 3 dextrose." You know, like the shame and the stigma that can come from, I think healthcare providers are great at providing the logistics. They're great at providing the scientific information. But unfortunately, sometimes not all, don't get me wrong, there's incredible ones. And like I said, the ones I met in recent years have been fantastic. But in the past, coming to them with those experiences and being told you've done it wrong, you've survived wrong, is...
Yes.
more isolating, and it feels worse than the next time it happens. Whereas when you talk to people about it who've gone through it, and you have a laugh and you say, "Yeah, we did not do that right, but we survived it, and we did it what was right for us."
Yeah,
and that's more important than doing something by the books, doing what's right for you as a person, as an individual, with this very scary experience. That already is very scary, given that it's the middle of the night and you're literally on your own. But then, yeah, to talk to someone who doesn't get it about it, versus talking to our lovely community and, like you said, firing up that tweet, hearing other people's experiences of what they did and how they got through it, is there's nothing like it.
So I've got a question here, which is actually a great thing, and I think about this all the time. What do you wish you'd known when you were newly diagnosed that you know now?
Anything.
I mean, it could be, you know, don't eat yellow snow. It could be, it could be anything. But you know,
that's a great question. I think just what I wish I'd known is that there's no right way to do this. I think when we're diagnosed, we're kind of given this set of criteria, rules, hoops to jump through, targets to meet. And there's just no right way to do it. And there's going to be periods of time where you put loads of work in and it doesn't go right. And then there's periods of time where you do absolutely nothing right and it all goes fine. There's no right way to do this. And it's very individual. And even if you figure out the right way, that could just be for that month. And then the next month it'll change again. So
that month, that hour, that day, that week.
Exactly. Diabetes is what they say in office terms, agile.
Yes.
So, that's what I wish I knew. Because I think I kept trying to meet things and targets that weren't realistic and were keeping me fixed in a place where I was. It was kind of a case of jump, and I'd say how high, and they'd say, "Ah, sure, jump there, we'll see." And that's not how it works.
So. I've just thought of another for the 90-second questions that we could have, and that's: have you ever cheated in your book 3 minutes before clinic time?
That's the only way I ever did it. I never filled in those books. Oh my god, it was shocking. And I don't know if anyone
three or four different pens.
Yes.
Pens. And you'd write sometimes with your left hand.
And you need to spill your tea on it a little bit as well.
Yes.
And
then punch a corner.
Did they do this for you though? So in my books, I must find them. I've kept them at home just for the years to have the records for the crack. But they used to circle my high blood sugars and underline my low blood sugars.
Oh,
God. So it was honestly like being in class and getting your essay corrected. So this is, but I have a theory now when I reflect back on it. I think they had no idea what the hell to say to me. and to people generally. I think, you know, I think they were honestly, like I said, they were doctors on rotation and they weren't seeing us continuously. I think they were just doing circles and lines for the craft. They didn't know what else to do.
It was just to give them something to talk about. Like, oh, if you had five circles and so many on a bajillion circles.
Yeah. Like, mine are all circles and lines. It was
It's like, in a way, it's like ringing a help desk, isn't it? You know, your care depends entirely on the person. And the answer you get regarding your problem to the help desk isn't going to be the same answer you get the next time when you phone.
Yeah. And it's like 6 months out of date because it was the bloods from the last appointment, not this one.
Yeah, that's
so true. We were talking a while ago, we were talking about the you know, I'm showing my age again, but we used to do urine tests and those were just, you know, those were just a number. It depends. And there could be 6 or 8 or 10 hours, depends when you last had a wee. But there was so kind of, you know, and we look now at the fact that I can look down at my device and that's my blood sugar now. I just come along
every minute with Libra, like it just is.
Yeah,
amazing. Yeah.
Kids. Yeah, kids don't know they're born.
I was just so interesting. I loved hearing more about home and how that was, because I wasn't diagnosed at home. I literally left the Republic to go to Queens weeks before I was diagnosed. I was in my first term in Queens.
Wow.
And so it's just really interesting to hear. But I'm in Wicklow, so I would have been in Loughlin's town, so I would have been like a bit more Edinburgh-y, like where I would have been closer to better care potentially. Limerick is diabolical.
Shocking. It's really shocking. Like, it's really sad as well, because Limerick people are great and deserve so much better. I'm joking. Just like, everyone deserves better. It's just, yeah, it's very frustrating looking at it now and seeing just we didn't know there was better. That's the thing that was mad. Like, I genuinely did not know there was better. I thought that was it. I thought this was diabetes for life, which of course led to me disengaging with my care, being resigned, staying high all day long. Sure, I thought I'd die at 30 anyways. So I just said I'd fucking crack on and was I just didn't realise you could have a quality of life with it. Because then as well, I think Camille touched on this last week as well, the kind of poster children for diabetes are always so far removed from where I was. So they were, you know, doing marathons or climbing mountains, and don't get me wrong, that's amazing and it's great to have those examples too, but I felt like it was a case of all or nothing. You either were absolutely thriving and climbing mountains or dying, and I I didn't realize there was just living in between. And like when I saw them do that as well, I just saw kind of privilege, you know. I saw the access to everything, and I was thinking, firstly, I never questioned actually how they managed to get there with it, because I thought the access was the same for everyone.
You didn't know it was different. You see, that was the same with me too, because I was 17 years before I got a pump, and it took me 5 to get it. And you're like, you don't know what you don't know. And you were saying it before with Tony too, like, you need the relationship for them to carry along with your care, so that you don't know the questions that to ask. You don't know the care that you should be offered at that stage of your life that should come from your healthcare professional to say, you're such and such, have you thought about this?
Yes.
Like, instead, and how do you know to ask, like, about things in advance, like folic acid and things like that? You just don't know.
Yeah, completely. And even what you're saying there about the building trust, I know there's a kind of a phenomenon with therapists, for example, that when you meet a therapist for the first time, you're kind of making an impression on them, and you're also testing them with things you might already know to see how comfortable you are with them and their responses. So when you're meeting with a GP or a doctor, your first appointment, you don't even realize it, but I think many people are just trying to make an impression of them and see what they're like and test them, because it's very vulnerable to ask for those things that you need. And it can be really hard to advocate for yourself. So to have to meet a new person every time, that you need a lot of confidence to go straight in the door and not worry about saying, hi, how are you? I'm this person, you know, get to know each other. It's very hard to just be like, hi, I need these things. And especially if maybe at the last appointment you were rejected or you were stigmatized in some way by the last healthcare provider, the next one you go into, you're not seeing a different person. You're seeing a healthcare provider who stigmatizes you, and it can, yeah, it can be really damaging.
And when you ask for those things, and when they're only prioritized for people who have bad diabetes,
yes,
that you're saying, I have bad diabetes, I need these things, and you're like, no, what's this? And it's just a resource shortage.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, I think it's a bit of propaganda the way the way that like diabetes tech has been marketed, because I had that experience as well, where it was very much told to me that, you know, and now it's so funny with everything I know that there's not one person in the world who's a bad diabetic. Anyone living with diabetes, living with it, is a good diabetic. There's no such thing as a bad one, because existing with this is so much work. And it's, yeah, I really do not, I can't 100%. Believe that that was even a thing that was ever said by them. Do you know that, like, if your diabetes is bad, you get this stuff? No one's diabetes is bad. Everyone is doing their best, and it looks different for everyone. And that's a core belief of mine.
And nobody is surviving wrong, like you said. I think that's exactly great. Gosh,
yeah.
Jean, I could just keep talking about, we could all just keep talking about this bit like for so long, because this is and lovely, and I know you need to talk about your advocacy stuff, like, too.
Yes.
Could I tell sorry you, like, it's really interesting that it's the same but different.
Yeah.
And it's like, people like even back to Tino, like, it just it's not the same. It's and like the T1D index shows that life expectancy in the Republic of Ireland is much less than the UK.
Yes.
Like, it's different in Northern Ireland as than it is to GB, to Great Britain, because, like, our numbers are clumped into the same thing because we don't have a diabetes audit either.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's not the same.
Yeah.
And we're so small. Like,
this is the thing. This is what bothers me, is that we're so small and it is so possible to get it right, and the funding is there. It's the complete inertia and lack of change and lack of resources, and the healthcare provider burnout. Like, the burnout for like people working in healthcare in Ireland is shocking. Like, they are just so poorly taken care of, and how is anything meant to function if the people delivering the care are not being taken care of? I mean, you know, it's just, absolutely, there's so much work to be done in all aspects of it. I do know, like, you're dead right there with the index, and Ireland is ranked in the fourth quartile of care, which is the last worst quartile for diabetes in the world. And it's just not good enough. It's, I mean, we're the most expensive country in Europe. We pay the most per person, as far, this is the last I have, but I could be wrong now, but we pay the most per person for our healthcare, as far as I'm aware. In Europe, yeah, it's shocking. Like, most people are private, and even with all that, like, with the amount of, and there's, it's not a funding issue either. The funding's actually there for pumps and for tech. It's just that people aren't trained in delivering them and delivering the training and the tech. So there's just so many systematic issues there that need to be unraveled and need to be worked on. And it requires demand. And I think what Ireland has done a very good job of for a long time is keeping people with diabetes apart from talking to each other. Yeah. So people feel very uncomfortable demanding something for themselves. But the more that we build a diabetes community, which I'm starting to see now, and it's, you know, thanks to like amazing things like this and DDoC and Thrive Obesities and Gráinne, like with Blood Sugar Trampoline, and so many other amazing advocates in Ireland, I feel like the community starting to build, and people are saying, yes, Liz, sorry, as well, absolutely, and people are starting to catch on to, you know, what we're meant to be entitled to, and that we can actually ask for these things, because it's like what you said about the bad diabetes. I think people have an idea in their head that they should only ask for tech, not even that they should ask, they'll wait to be told that they need tech until their diabetes is bad, you know, what we're meant to be entitled to. So they're like what I was like, which was completely resigned disengaged. I was waiting to be bad. Yeah, I was waiting to be bad enough to be seen, to be heard, to be given attention. And it just took talking to other people with diabetes to realize what I should have been getting, and having good healthcare for the first time, that I was like, oh, this is not right. And this is not my trajectory.
That's the thing, because like that, what you just said there just twitched me, because we're waiting to be bad, and we have strong voices because we have type 1 diabetes, and we can put our hands up and say we need this because, and we have like more data and everything to show for it. What about people who don't have type 1? What about people who have type 2 diabetes?
Yeah.
And like, what is there waiting to be bad?
Yeah.
I noticed that when, because my dad was type 2 for quite a while. And, you know, when I swapped over from using Libras, I had 3 or 4 Libras, which I put onto him, and it really helped him being a type 2. But again, going back to his nurse and saying, he's 84 years of age, type 2, any chance of getting a Libra? You know, here's the stuff.
And you know what frustrates me, though, is they don't even signpost people to the fact that, you know, they don't even say,
you can go buy a pipe, but you need this. We can't give it to you.
Yeah.
You could pay for it. And this is how much it is.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, right. Firstly, one thing I want to say on the type 2, I'm such an advocate for type 2 having tech. I know in France, people with type 2, I could be wrong. Someone might correct me if I'm wrong on this, or let me know if I have this right.
Nat's in the chat. She can.
Oh, brill. I think it's 60% of hospitalizations were reduced for people with type 2 because of having access to the Libra.
She said 100%.
Great. Yeah. So I thought that was, that was the last stat I had heard on it. And I think, honestly, anyone with type 2 should have access to tech. It drives me mental that type 2s don't get access to it, and B, type 2s aren't encouraged to share their voices the same way we are, or you know, it drives me mad. But just on that point as well, about the not being told, so when your dad wasn't told that he could go buy it, for me, when I asked for the Libra, bear in mind I was paying for private care, right, I have type 1, I asked for the Libra, and instead they asked me to go use a bolus advisor for a year to prove that I could carb count and use tech effectively, because it would overwhelm me, the Libra, and I wouldn't know what to do with it. So they gave me a thing. And what's worse again, right, is I thought that when they gave me the Libra that I would then have it on my prescription. But no, they gave me one free Libra, and I said, okay, and great, is that on my prescription now? No, you go and self-fund it. You order it through this website. I could have been doing that myself for the year previously. I didn't know.
You are joking me.
Yeah. Honestly, oh, my journey with tech is hilarious. So I, this is the trajectory, right? I asked for the Libra, I got a bolus advisor, then I got the Libra, right, and I was paying for it, and then I got onto them because honestly I literally did not have the disposable income. Like I said, I was on a graduate salary, all of my spare money at this point has been spent on my appointments and health insurance. So then I said I couldn't afford it anymore.
Not so student union.
Not for this gal.
Kebabs. You should have cut back on the kebabs.
I was taking insulin shots. Other people.
We've all been students. Don't pull that one.
No, this is honestly, graduate salary. Like,
only joking.
Cost of living in the Republic of Ireland is just ridiculous.
We're the most expensive in Europe. Yeah. So I was literally like, It was shocking. And but what's funnier again, right, so I got the Libra, I was paying for it, told them I couldn't afford it, could I go on to the Dexcom, because the Dexcom was now covered at this point, right? They said no, and they managed to write me a letter so that I'd get my Libra on my prescription, because I had proven with its use that I had HbA1c, I had improved HbA1c control. So asked for the Libra, got the bonus advisor. Asked for the Dexcom, got the Libra, right? Next steps. I'm on the Libra for over a year, or over 2 years at this point. And then I ask for, 2 years. Then I ask for an insulin pump, right?
I dare you.
They offer me a Dexcom.
Oh, could you ask for a car next?
I know, right? Oh my God. But I just thought it was gas. Like, literally, no matter what I asked for, they'd offer
negotiation.
Oh my god! And when they offered me the Dexcom, that is when that was my breaking point. And I wrote them a 6-page letter explaining how my mental health had just absolutely deteriorated with the 15 years at this point of injections, them not working for me, waking up high every day, like poor quality sleep. And I had just friends at this point who had pumps, and I knew that that was what was right for me. And when I wrote them that letter anyway, they got the pump for me within 6 months, which is a phenomenal turnaround. But still,
No, that's not fair, because that's the whole approach where you need to split your wrists,
yeah,
show them the blood dripping out of your arteries,
yeah,
and for them to go, oh yeah, okay then.
Yeah, literally, that is what it took, to be fair. Like, I was at complete breaking point, and we were talking about burnout earlier. Burnout, yeah, is what I was in. Like, it was just horrendous. I was so, so unwell all the time. Didn't feel like I could take up a full-time job. There's so many things that were at this point impacting my mental health, and I was so worried about long-term complications. And I just knew that this would improve my quality of life. So I wrote them the email, and yeah, they got it done for me. But again, paid 400 euros. I think actually 600. I think it was 400 then 200 for the appointments. For the pump training. So again, it's down to a complete inequity in Ireland as well. Yeah, really, really shocking. But it's changed my life. I'm on it 2.5 years now, or just over 2 years, sorry. And it has absolutely changed my life. Like, I cannot imagine not being on an insulin pump now. And it breaks my heart knowing that we still don't have a pump clinic in Limerick, and getting a pump is totally down to your, A, the way your healthcare provider talks about it, and B, if they even talk about it.
Wow. And you still can't get one in Limerick, though, because you've got a pump clinic.
No, I think you can get it privately. I think there's one endocrinologist in Limerick who does it privately. I could be wrong now. If people have more up-to-date information, definitely tweet it and share that out if things have improved. But as far as we're concerned with the Midwest, we still don't have a pump clinic for adults, just for children, pediatrics.
Wow.
Mm, wow. Yeah, so you have to travel. So again, it's all affordability.
So this is huge advocacy for your own self, and having to like really visualize the burden of your diabetes for your team to actually get access to your like small bits of token tech as you go along. Like you're like, I did say slitting your wrists, and that's not fair. Like, but you're like showing them your insight.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
That's your personal advocacy, and I've read and heard you speaking about like the advocacy in the Midwest and how that started up and making huge changes in 2022 even earlier than 2022, wasn't it? Like, was it before then too, where you guys all got together?
It was over the 2 years. So yeah, it was 2021 when we formed. Those years are a blur with the pandemic. But yeah, it was 2021. But I think it was 2022 was our first.
In very recent times.
Yeah, because our World Diabetes Day for 2022 was like our kind of big one there, where we met outside. Oh God, is my brain getting this wrong?
Actually,
now?
Sorry, the hospital.
2021 or 2022, I can't. Yeah, one of the 2 years there anyway. No, 2021. Sorry, it's 2021 because I moved over here in 2022. So yeah, 2021 was when we met up outside the hospital, and we had
still loads of masks being worn in that picture.
Exactly. Picture. Yeah. So still, yeah, it was an outdoor meetup, an outdoor gathering.
Yeah.
But we did loads that year. Geez, we really tried to drive things home, and it was great. There was such a good turnaround. I mean, we went from having. So in that diabetes clinic that I don't attend, but that is the one that's local to me in Limerick, there was a 0.5 of a whole-time equivalent of an endocrinologist. So literally, that means for that diabetes clinic, there is only an endocrinologist working there on a half-time basis, not a full-time basis, and just one. And there's now three, I believe.
That's amazing.
Two or three. I think one might have left, but I think two or three. And then we went from no dietitians to 4 positions being funded for, and they were filled, but some of them have left since. So hopefully that's what I'm studying as well, to go back into one of those positions, hopefully. And then we got Daphne accredited in 2022, which is great. Yeah, it was June 2022. And then
That's phenomenal. And that's just literally from you guys getting together and beating the drum.
Literally, yeah. So Midwest Diabetes is just, they've been my lighthouse, to be honest, those girls. So it's Grania, the original team there was Grania, Ashleen, Erin, and Jill. And yeah, we'd have monthly committee meetings and basically divvy out parliamentary questions to send through to the Dáil. And we'd do that through our local politicians who were really supportive and helpful. And they would basically drive forward to get those questions asked to really highlight the lack of services and lack of positions and lack of care being delivered in Limerick and in the Midwest. And so we met monthly to basically have Zoom calls over deciding on those parliamentary questions, talking about what's been happening, and then divvying them out and kind of building relationships with our politicians and meeting with them and showing them how important it is, you know, for these things to change and for services to be improved. And then we had like the World Diabetes Day meetup as well, outside the hospital. So we did a dip for diabetes first. We went for a swim that morning, and we did a swim, which was great crack. So we actually did two swims. We did one the week prior, and then we did another one at Snobby Sosta, a great swimming group in Clare. If anyone ever goes to Clare, it's fantastic. That morning, and then went on to have a kind of a gathering outside the hospital that afternoon, and there was about 30 people who showed up. Wow. And we wore our masks and all talked about the lack of services, and then went for a bit of food afterwards and chatted and got the peer support there as well. So it was brilliant. Really special day. And also Grania and Ashleen were on DDoC that day as well. They were on DOC day, which I wasn't really familiar with DDoC at the time, so it was gas now looking back on it that they were actually talking about what we were about to do on DOC day. Cool. Yeah, so it was brilliant. Yeah, so it was a really big event, and it was just fantastic. And yeah, we've still have been driving things forward since. We had another lovely I wasn't there for it, but helped organize it from Scotland for World Diabetes Day, with our kind of new committee members here now, Aoife and another Aoife and Gareth. So they've joined on the Midwest group, and we had it was lovely. They did a meetup outside the Strand Hotel in Limerick, and the Strand went blue for us, and all of the different kind of places around the river in Limerick went blue for us. And they did a walk run to raise awareness around type 1 for World Diabetes Day. So I was sad to not be there, but it was lovely at the same time to know there was stuff still happening, and that we were still raising awareness around type 1 in Limerick and diabetes services.
So then, you know, like you do, like there's all this stuff that wasn't happening in Limerick, like starting to happen, and you're there, and then you move to Edinburgh.
I know.
To study like dietetics. Is that to use and go back home with?
Yes. That's the goal. That's the plan. So
I love that.
Yeah, that's been my end goal. It's just really hard to get into dietetics in Ireland. If I did it in Ireland, I was working at the University of Limerick, and I wouldn't have met the criteria to get into the course. In the University of Limerick, it's so inaccessible for people. It's wild. You need to have all these prerequisites for the courses. So I had been starting an online one in Ireland 2 years before that, but it wasn't for me. It was remote learning, and there was no placement. There was no clinical basis to it, really. So it was very much a science course. And it was brilliant, don't get me wrong. It was really good, just not for me. So that's why I moved over to Scotland for this one. And it's an integrated master's, so it's a bachelor's and master's together. That's the end goal, to get back to the Limerick services. And I'm still like with Midwest Diabetes, and I'm on the Diabetes Steering Committee at the University of Limerick. From when I worked there, I still am in collaboration with them a lot to talk about projects and whatnot, and must pick back up on a few of them actually. I'm so passionate about seeing things at home change. It's not good enough.
No, it's not good enough. And what have you learned being in Edinburgh? And like there's the whole like Diabetes Eddie now, like that you're involved with and like got started with as well, like in there. And I see Alison's in the chat as well. Like, and how there's so much happening with like the Diabetes Tech Can't Wait for you guys in Scotland.
Yes.
Like policy change and like powerful advocacy. How does it compare, Jane?
Oh my God, I honestly am blown away by it. And with Diabetes Edinburgh, I need to give credit to, again, Dawn. I'm giving Dawn loads of shout outs here, but Dawn basically organised the first meetup without intending to back during Fringe when I first moved over. So I moved over in June 2022. And Dawn came over in August for Fringe and she organised a meetup. And I hadn't met Dawn in person at this point in Ireland. So I met her in Edinburgh for the first time and Alison was there as well. So that was really kind of the first meetup. But no, what happened with Diabetes Edinburgh is I had emailed Diabetes Scotland asking them if there was a peer support group because I just knew I'd need it the way I had the girls from Midwest in Ireland. I was like, this is such an incredible community to be part of and has had such a positive impact on my mental health. I was like, I want that here. And having had that meetup as well in August with Dawn really solidified that. I think I reached out to Mary actually as soon as I got over, Diabetes Scotland. But they were just on board straight away, connected myself and Alison who's here and Norma as well. I don't think Norma's here, but so we got going then, basically had our first meetup in November, the day before World Diabetes Day. And it's been incredible. Like, we have a lovely committee now of like 7 people who are just all amazing people. And we've had meetups monthly since then, which has been gorgeous. So we had our 1 year anniversary there in November, which has just been fabulous. But yeah, the differences are just incredible. Like, I will say the engagement with Diabetes Scotland is fantastic. Like the Diabetes Tech Can't Wait campaign that they've run. Yeah. So like when that was happening in Limerick this year for World Diabetes Day, I was at the Scottish Parliament with Diabetes Scotland because they had us there as advocates and they had all of the different stakeholders who are involved in the Diabetes Tech Can't Wait campaign, where, you know, other advocates shared their stories of the change and the impact Diabetes Tech has had on them. And politicians got to speak about their learnings now about diabetes. And it was just incredible. Like kudos to Diabetes Scotland for what they drive forward here. And then in terms of the healthcare, like when I've given flyers about Diabetes Edinburgh to any of my, I suppose my GP or my clinic, they've put them straight into their waiting room tables, which is so lovely to see that support of healthcare providers signposting peer support and being really encouraging about it, which is great. Yeah. In terms of the care itself, they're fantastic. One thing that I did notice, though, that is unusual is, so in Ireland, I got my pump and my CGM. But if I wanted to have that here, they don't give you the CGM for Medtronic. So they support me because I'm on it. They have to honour what I'm already on. But I do find it very unusual. They give people a 780G pumps and not the sensor. So they won't fund the sensor. So I think it's a bit like giving someone a car without an engine. It's very confusing. So the Diabetes Tech Can't Wait campaign is really important to highlight, I suppose, the inequity in accessing care and the lack of access to care.
How it is in Northern Ireland. There's no advanced CGM funded in Northern Ireland for peds or adults.
No way.
No. Yeah. No. No. Adult or child has. That's such a lie, Mary. There's funding for 10% of pediatrics who are on pumps. So they give out pumps to pediatrics. There's a chunk percentage, like say like 45-50% of pediatrics are on insulin pumps. Oh, wow. None are funded for advanced CGM except for the 10% that is saved for those that are diagnosed under 4 because Libre isn't licensed for under 4s.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. So we have no access to hybrid closed loop in Northern Ireland.
Oh my God. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Are the pumps funded?
The pump is, it's like you're given a car without any diesel.
Like, what the hell? It just makes no sense. I'm really shocked by it. I don't understand the logic behind it because it's not like, what is
Peds
the point
get
of
it in the south?
Yeah,
Peds get it in the south. They get Dexcom and they get like the Guardian 4, but they and they get the G7 and we can get Libre.
That's it. Oh my
god!
Everybody
with type 1 can get Libre, which not everybody with type 1 could get Libre. Like I think it's over 21s, like couldn't get Libre in the south.
Oh my god.
But I think that's changed now. But like it's just how like it's the same but it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's it. It's just not, yeah. I'll keep saying it's not good enough. Yeah.
It's not good enough.
Yeah.
I'm really conscious of the time. It's 10 to 10. Right, look, important stuff. Tell me some important stuff, Jane, that you need to talk about. Like, talk about the IVF, will you? And DDoC. Tell me important things about the IVF and DDoC.
So the IDF, we're in good company here, but is the International Diabetes Federation, because IDF has for the International Diabetes Federation of Europe. So I basically was very lucky to be selected as a participant in their youth leadership lab in 2022, and it was fantastic and life-changing and all of those things. I honestly just cannot recommend enough checking if your national diabetes charity is a member of their associations list, and because you'll need a letter of support to attend. But if you know anyone between the age of 18 and 30, advise them to attend. It is an incredible advocacy bootcamp. Like, you just learn so much. So I basically attended, and it was in Poland in 2022, and there's a whole list of incredible speakers who go to this, and the program put together is by the International Diabetes Federation, along with the host association. So depending on the country that it's been hosted in.
Oh, okay,
Also, they just did their call out for host associations for this country, for this year. So if you've got contacts with your diabetes association, let them know. In case you'd like it to be hosted in your country, because it's just amazing. So like in the one in Poland, it was the Polish Diabetes Association, along with IDF Europe, basically putting together an amazing program of speakers and of activities and of advocacy events and stuff like that during that week. And they select up to 25 people from all across Europe to attend, and you go along for the week and you make your best friends for life, which I had my friends from it just over for New Year's just gone there, along with Camille. I've seen, funnily enough, the friends I made at that camp, I've seen more over the last year and a half since I moved to Scotland, between all the DDoC events and diabetes events generally, than I have my friends from home. You know, we did our sad goodbyes like you do at summer camp as a kid when we were leaving the camp in Poland, and then all of a sudden I was seeing them every single month.
Like, do you know, in my head of it, like at the end of this, I was going to ask you, like, you do an awful lot of diabetes travel these days, and like, do you actually go on holidays, like, do non-diabetes stuff?
I thought about this. I honestly, over the last year, so I just counted up, I did 16 international trips over the last year, and only one of them was not diabetes related, which is wild. I was wondering why, like, it came to Christmas time and I was completely burnt out over the last few weeks. Just, like, couldn't lift a finger, like, honestly. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, where's my motivation? Where's my... And then I did the tot up and I was looking at my ear and I was like, oh, that was a bit mental.
That's fair enough.
So, very grateful and bloody incredible. But, yeah, just bananas. I had that one trip that wasn't diabetes related. But it ended up, do you know what? Diabetes is one of those things where it's a little attention seeker.
It creeps in.
It became a diabetes trip because I was in India and for my friend's wedding, and I froze my insulin. All of it. I'm so clever that I put my Creo bags into the fridge. Do not try this at home. So I froze my insulin, and that became a whole fiasco. A lot of tears, a lot of scary times. But it was fine. It all worked out. One of the people attending the wedding lives down the road from me in Limerick, didn't know this, but there was an issue with their visa where the visa people got one number on their visa wrong, or one number on their passport wrong on the visa. So by the time my insulin froze, this person was due to fly out the next day. And was able to meet my mother and bring over my insulin.
Joking me, like, you actually got it solved from home rather than
in India. Isn't that wild?
Bonkers.
I thought it was amazing. I honestly didn't even think about getting it in India. I was just like, how do I get my own insulin? Oh, that's all I could think about. It's weird how our brain doesn't really think logically in those situations. Well, it's not weird at all. It's fight or flight, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You have to ask that question outside yourself. You have to go, I've frozen my insulin online, and then people go, I know somebody somewhere. Let me get back to you.
That's it. So this fight, flight and freeze. I went into freeze like my insulin.
And all you told was your mummy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it took me ages to tell her, though. I just couldn't. Oh, God, the thought of phoning her from India and telling her I'd frozen all of my insulin was the biggest nightmare.
Do you know, that was what I was worried about with Johnny was away skiing over Christmas, and I was terrified of that, like trying to get insulin to him in Austria, like if it was frozen. Didn't happen. But so that's the youth lab. So what, DDoC?
Yes, DDoC. Do you know what? DDoC and IDF Europe have been lovely and intertwining over the last year. On the International Diabetes Federation of Europe as well, it's just really important that people keep an eye out for those applications for when they look for people, because before we move away from it, I just cannot recommend it enough, because like the other opportunities I've gotten through them have been incredible. Like I worked for them for a few months as well as their youth coordinator. So I worked with them I did the lab in July, and then I started working with them from August until April this year just gone. And they do so many brilliant things. Like not only did I get to work with them and have amazing opportunities as their youth coordinator in like creating their first ever alumni event, because the camp's been running for 11 years and has loads of alumni, and it's changed so many people's lives, like getting to attend, similar to DDoC, just a kind of a different age range. And you know, it's helped people find peer support in ways they wouldn't have before. You know, some people attending that lab might only be in their diabetes association, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have friends with type 1 around them. So it's life-changing, and we got to have our first ever alumni meetup, which we did as a hackathon in October that year. And beyond that as well, like they asked me to speak at the European Parliament for World Diabetes Day on the diabetes resolution. And then continuing on from that this year, in December just gone, I spoke at the WHO and IDF Europe Diabetes Summit and about the resolution on building more resilient healthcare systems in times of crises and emergencies. So I just really want to say a big thanks to IDF Europe, because they've been such a huge part of my advocacy journey and in everything I've gotten to do and everything I've gotten to learn. And they had me back as like a mentor for their lab this year in Bulgaria, which was incredible, and got to meet again another batch of amazing diabetes advocates from all across Europe who are just so passionate about making things better in their country. And it's just been, they're incredible. And like a lovely project has come out, because of the space we're in here, I'll just give them a shout out. So there's D Youth, and that was the podcast project from the lab this year just gone. And they're doing basically, they want to know your story. So they have a form that you fill out, and they look for people's stories basically about their experience and journeys, and they share it as a weekly episode on their podcast.
Is Saoirse doing that? Is it Saoirse now?
No, there's no one Irish in that group. No.
No, I'm thinking of something else then. No.
Yeah,
That's brilliant. Would you share the podcast, and because that would be interesting to share out, I think.
Absolutely. I'll share the link here afterwards on a reply. I'm not sure how to do it from this, but I'll share it after.
You share it on your own account, and we hashtag the diabetes chat on it. And when you see any of those applications, when they're published, like, would you share them too? Because I'll share them in the parents groups in the north here too, and in the south as well. You probably have that. Grania's in the one in the south anyway, but like they're up to teens. They're not actually over 18s. But anyway, that's right. I digress.
But either way, just to have it in people's mind and to keep an eye on it and to be, you know, following, because they're on Instagram and Twitter now as well. So if people are even following IDF Europe and seeing what other people aged 18 to 30 are doing and getting involved in, like IDF Europe promote all of the work by the advocates. So it's great for people just to even keep an eye and see, like, you know, for if even if the kids are under 18 that in those groups, the that they can be kind of following the journeys of other advocates and seeing if that's something they want to get involved in and seeing their stories, you know.
Yeah,
it's a great way to stay informed.
Exactly. I'm just trying to see if I missed anything. Tell me if I've missed anything important.
Oh, sorry, we were going to chat about DDoC, but I don't know, do we have time? Yes. Or do we have...
What have you loved about DDoC?
Oh, what have I not loved about DDoC? Okay, I'm glad. No, I'm so glad. I would have been heartbroken if we didn't get to talk about that.
We can't talk about DDoC.
Exactly. And it's so exciting, actually, because you mentioned there yourself and Flipper are going to Florence, and I'm going as well, so I can't wait to see you both there. Yeah, so it'll be great.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I cannot wait. DDoC, my God, where do I start? So 2022 was a very interesting year because in Ireland, we came out of lockdown in February. And then my first ever DDoC conference was in April. So it was in Barcelona for ATD. And what was amazing about it was, so I got the virtual scholarship for the first conference. And but I was over in Barcelona because I was at Abbott's, their DX forum. So I was at the DX forum in Barcelona. So I got to meet like Steffi and go to the last day of ATD in person. And yeah, so it was amazing. And I got to meet Kate Gajewska over there as well. I was sitting next to her in the symposium I was in. It was the ISPAD symposium on the amazing little book that was written by Jade Byrne and illustrated by Frederick Banting's cousin. I'll share the link to it after. I can't think of I think it's just called The Invention of Insulin, but it's a beautiful book. It was just such a roller coaster, basically. That being the start of kind of my international advocacy stuff, you know, going over to Barcelona for the DX forum, then getting to actually go in person to ATD as well when I'd been doing it online up until that Saturday, and meeting Kate and Svea, and I met, who else did I meet in person there? I met a few people in person there, which was so nice to put like names to faces. And then it has just been amazing since. Like, DDoC, honestly, I owe them the world because I've been very lucky to get the scholarships to the conferences since. So I attended EASD after that in Stockholm, and that's where I met Tom, which was fabulous because Tom was speaking at that one on Diabetes Chat at the DDoC symposium.
Yes, Jean.
Yeah, oh, it was amazing. Oh my God, what a week. Like, it was just, and you were brilliant. It was
so much fun.
Yeah, it was incredible. Like, it was,
so much. When did you start, like, the diabetes mindset? Because we need to just quickly talk about it too. Like, and like, it was only like yesterday.
This is the thing that baffles me. It's been, like, I feel like I've just been, like kicked into it all, to be honest.
Have your mum and daddy ever have they seen you since, like, in the last 3 years?
They were so good. They came to I was organizing the T1D festival with League of Diabetes back in October, and they came over with my sisters. Stop. And yeah, it was because my sister performed at it as well, so it was absolutely amazing.
Oh, I knew that. Yes,
yeah, so they came over, they're incredibly supportive. Like, my dad wears his blue circle pin every single day. He does not take the blue circle pin off. Like, they are just incredibly supportive of everything I do, because I'm very conscious of the fact that even the Youth Leadership Lab now, since I went in 2022, I've missed my mom's birthday both years. I've seen her the week after, but it's always on during her birthday. I come straight home the week after. I fly from it. They're incredible about it all. But yeah, I make sure to see them. I fly back a good bit, so thankfully. But yeah, I started it in 2020. So literally the pandemic was on during 2020. And my first ever kind of engagement with the online community was Grania's Amazing Thrive Avicii's online conference during the pandemic. And I jumped on to let people know that you could get the Libra reimbursed with 6 months of use and demonstrating improved HbA1c control. I just wanted everyone to know that you had some way of getting the Libra for free. I was very naive and very green, and I did not realize that that was just not the case, that it was, you know, that it's not every healthcare provider is going to write that letter and going to support people. So my whole goal of starting advocacy was then, when I realized that people weren't getting letters written for them, was to let them know you could get tax back on the Libra. So that literally, that's how I got involved with diabetes advocacy. I just wanted to tell people how to get money back on the Libra so people could get the Libra. And then I realized this whole community existed and I was just blown away. And yeah, it's all escalated since, because then we were in the pandemic up until 2022. Mm-hmm. Once everything opened up again, so that opened up in around March. Then April, I went to Barcelona for the DX Forum and ADD. And then the months after, I went to the IDF Youth Leadership Lab. And I also went over to see Jade Burns Pricks in Newcastle. So every trip all of a sudden became about diabetes, because I then moved over in June to Edinburgh for my master's. I got told I got the master's in the middle of June and moved over by the end of the month. And then, yeah, everything since has been just diabetes related, and it's been conferences and labs. And
did you speak in public before?
No. So, it's been a roller coaster. Really thrown into it. But yeah, I'm just kind of swimming and hoping for the best and hoping things change.
It really suits you, Jane. I was chatting to Tony on Saturday, and I was like, there's a word that describes Jane, and she's just sparkly.
Oh,
you're just sparkly.
Thank you so much. That's very kind. That is an amazing word. I'm so pleased with that. That is, if people say what's one word that people would use to describe you, I'm going to run with that because I love it. Thank you.
Like Prosecco with gold dust in it.
Kinda, yeah. You're just so smiley and sparkly and that whole chat, Tony, was there was lots of sadness. Like, there's just like, it's just not right. It's not good enough. Mm. Will I do a wee summary, Tony?
Go for it.
You're in charge tonight. Okay. I'm a trusted lieutenant.
Jean, we had such a lovely chat with you, and it was I'm going to say it was just nicer because you're a girl from home too. We talked about the differences between the Republic of Ireland and Edinburgh, basically in care, and how vastly different it is, and we. Like at the end there, like even talking about how different it is from East Coast to West Coast in Ireland. And it's the same, but it's different. And it's not what people think.
Yeah.
They don't even think about it.
Yeah. There's so many assumptions, I think, around what diabetes care is like in each country. I mean, another thing that I've learned through DDoC and the IDF Europe Youth Leadership Lab is how different care is in country to country in Europe, and how we can make assumptions about a country and what they have available to them.
Yeah, I just got goosebumps on my knees there, like, because that's where the advocacy stuff is really strong, and where what I feel about like DDoC and anything else I'm involved in is that you learn about what's outside your own diabetes.
Like, yes,
you just think that everybody's the same as you, and nobody is. Everybody's different, and I think what advocacy, I feel, even having two with type one in this house, we are both very different, and our diabetes is very different, and we are the same type, and we are in the same trust. We have just different consultants, but our bodies are different, we're different genders and different ages, and nobody with diabetes has the same experience, even in the same bubble.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like your work in advocacy with IDF Europe and the Leadership Lab and all with DDoC and what you do for all of us with like in the World Diabetes Day conference, hosting the international like session as well. It's bringing other diabetes and other countries together. It's just really nice. I really love the work you do, and thank you so much for talking about it tonight. And I feel like I've learned a lot.
Thank you so much, Mary. That's so kind. Thank you. And same to yourself as well. Like, the work you do is incredible. And I just feel like we're in such good company here. Like, as I said a while ago, like, it does take a village. And I feel like the work that we all collectively do is just so important. It's what stitches the fabric to hopefully build that tapestry for better care and frameworks that people can take what they need for their own advocacy and build it into what's suitable for their, you know, their countries, their politics, their culture, and leave the rest, and just so that hopefully care improves everywhere. That's the goal, isn't it? Like, we start by advocating, like Steffi said this before from NEDOC, like, we start by advocating for ourselves, and that becomes advocating for others. And that's the thing, I think when we build this community, it becomes so much easier to ask for what's needed when we know that it's not just one order, that it's a group order, and you know, within that group order there's individual needs and differences, but just that it's not just for yourself, it's so much stronger to ask as that choir and to have that community. So I think between what you do here in Diabetes Chat and all in your own independent advocacy work, and yeah, we're in very good company here, and I always feel that way in the diabetes community. It's incredible, and there's nothing like it.
Yeah, and our voices are small, but like, I'm just the last thing I was going to say was that you spoke on DDoC, and the title of it, or it was about the butterfly effect.
Yeah,
and like, this is what it is. It's no big strong voices. It's just individuals.
Yeah,
trying, like, making change in the Midwest, making change in Edinburgh, making change in the Republic of Ireland, in Northern Ireland, in Great Britain, in Europe, in countries beyond Europe. Like, it's just individuals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I don't think people realize this as well, like, the more individuals that step up and that come forward and use their voices, you know, sometimes people can feel like they're not expert enough, or they don't know enough, or they don't have enough experience, or, you know, there's all these different things that people have in their mind that holds them back from using their voice. But it is so important, because every experience is so individual and unique. And I can only speak to my experience, and I try to, in my advocacy, represent as many needs as possible and think of as many things as possible. But I guarantee there's 101 things that I haven't experienced yet, and there's 101 things that I might not ever experience that someone else definitely has. Like, I didn't have DKA on diagnosis, for example, so I don't know what needs to be addressed there in advocacy. There's so many different experiences with type 1 that are so unique to the individual. Yeah. And everyone's voice is important. Like, it's not just a case that, like, and it's not about pressure either. Sorry, I don't think people with diabetes need to be an advocate. I think having diabetes in its own right is more than enough work. Like, I have friends with type 1 who are there, like, you know, they say they feel so bad they're not doing advocacy. And I'm like, you have type 1, that is more than enough. Like, I love advocacy, and that's why I do it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it. It's changed my life in such incredible ways, and it's how I've made the second family that I've made, and there's so much to it that I get from it selfishly, you know, from the people I get to meet and the incredible things I get to see happening in change. Right. But that's something I'm passionate about. For people with type 1, having type 1 is more than enough. You're an advocate just by having type 1 and doing advocacy. My point is just anyone who feels like they want to do advocacy shouldn't not do it because they think their voice isn't important. If you're feeling that call to get into advocacy, to speak up, do it. Your voice is so important, and it doesn't matter if you're saying the same things as well. It's not that what you're saying has to be different. The more repetition we have of issues, and the more repetition of things coming up, and the more demand we have for different things, the better. So basically, there is no limitations to getting into advocacy. There should be no barriers. Unfortunately, obviously, with different countries and visas and stuff like that, it's really frustrating. But still drive forward, and ways will be found to get your voice in the room. I hate this thing of, like, seats at a table. I really think we should flip the table. Like, tables have limited numbers of seats, and honestly, I think when it comes to advocacy, there should be no limit to the amount of seats there. No tables.
And you just started by just talking about being yourself with diabetes.
Yeah.
And that's just all it takes.
Yeah.
If you want to start being an advocate, it's just talking about your own
Literally, and that's where the name came from for my name, the Diabene Mindset. Actually, it was just about, I got, like, when I was started blogging about it, I was like, oh, I don't want to be negative, I don't want to be positive. And I was like, there's neither. You're just being, you're constantly being with it. There's never, it's not a, diabetes isn't a fair weather friend, it's with you through everything.
Yeah.
So you're just existing with it, and yeah, you being yourself with your experience and sharing your experience could make one other person feel less alone in theirs. And I think there's nothing more powerful than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jane Langford. Oh,
thank you. This was lovely. Oh, I just had the most gorgeous evening. Thank you so much. It's just been incredible. Jane.